Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Hi, Jacob.
He snuck in. I wasn't even paying attention.
He came in right when you were talking about if it was on terminals, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Whoa. So, no super long reviews today. I know we have some bigger titles, but we have a lot of games.
I will do my best to keep it succinct.
I will pretend question. Like I will.
Can we move V-Ball to next week? I could even do Tuesday if need be.
I guess so. Because they were sent as a pair, so we won't have a problem with that. But yeah, I'll move it.
Thank you. It's the only one I did not get to, and yeah, I was going to get to it this evening, and my dog decided that he had other plans.
Sounds about right for a dog.
Did your dog fuck your shoe?
No, so I don't know if Joe told you guys about my situation earlier in this week.
I broke up.
So like last minute we found out that we might be expected to so my niece is getting married tomorrow. Okay. And like last minute we found out that like we might be expected to be at the rehearsal dinner, even though we're not in the wedding party, but like we're family. So like we're expected, like, and like, yeah, like my sister-in-law ordered like $500 worth of Olive Garden, like catering stuff. and so I'm telling Joe, like,
feed a family of four.
Yeah, right. But Wednesday morning, like, I informed Joe, like, this might be a thing. I decided, you know, I don't really feel like going. I don't feel like socializing with people. I just got done with my 4-day work shift. I'm just going to stay at home and, like, you know, laze about and all that kind of stuff. And Angus, my dog, decides that he nowadays,
fuck your shoe.
No, he's not. I don't wear shoes, man. Like,
oh, so he was Crocs. Fucking your foot then.
No, he wasn't fucking my foot.
Your Crocs.
No, I don't wear Crocs. I wear sandals. Anyway.
I'm hippie.
Oh my God. So anyway, so my kids are usually the one that take them out and about, like to go take a shit out in the yard and stuff like that. And it's gotten to the point where he now expects them. And so like, if the kids are like staying over at their grandparents, for like a week or something like that, like he is gone where he's just like, yeah, I'm not going to shit for 2 days. Like, where are my servants? Like, they are supposed to be walking me. This evening, I'm trying to get him to go out, like, to go take a shit. Like, I've walked him around the property, done all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, fuck it. I've now had to do this twice, and he still won't poop for me. Like, whatever. I'm going to go take my shower. And this is, like, 7:45 tonight. So, like, hour 15 from now.
You're going to shower during the show.
Yeah.
You know what? we're gonna take this show to new places.
Jacob, tell us about Matt. I'm singing in the rain.
So I get in the shower, like I've got the baseball game going, like, you know, I'm in the shower, like, starting to, like, I just started washing my hair, and all of a sudden I hear Angus barking his head off from the living room, and I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sake, you gotta be kidding me. And he, like, and I'm just like, and so I hop out of the shower, you know, I'm soaking wet, like, in a towel that's, like, barely covering me, because I'm a fat piece of shit. And like, so I let him outside, and he's just standing on the porch, like, are you coming? Like, come on, man. Like, you know, are you gonna walk me around? Like, and I'm like in nothing but like a towel, and I'm like, I'm trying to coax him from inside the house, like, either get off the porch and go take a shit, or like, you know, come back inside the house. And he's just like, like, Nani? Like, and I'm just. And, so yeah, so I have to, like, go throw some clothes on, and then, like, he finally hops off the, he finally hops off the porch and makes me watch him take a shit in the front yard. like, and he's making eye contact.
Yes.
He did make eye contact with me the whole entire time. Like, it's like, you're watching, right? Like, to make sure that, like, nobody's gonna kill me, but you're also watching me take this shit, right? Like, and then, so, like.
Out my body.
so he takes this massive dump in the big, like, and it's like, and he's a tiny dog too, and so, like, this is easily like a third of his body weight, like, and yeah, it's like, so, like, he takes this huge massive shit and then just runs back up the porch and hops back into the house, like, you know, I'm the best boy in the world, like, you know, look at me, I'm so good. And yeah, so then I had, like, so then I finally get to take my shower, and, like, all of a sudden my phones just start, like, ringing off the hook because my dad's trying to ask me questions about this app that, you know, like, how does this work? Blah, 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 blah. And my wife's trying to tell me that, by the way, it's trash night tonight. And I'm like, yeah. So at least I'm clean for this show.
Wow. Are
you? You sound like you had a lot of interruptions. Are you sure you cleaned everything like you were supposed to?
Yes, I cleaned everything.
Okay. Clean your shoe.
I don't wear shoes.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. Following on the heels of that story, Jacob's here. Hockey's here, and Bree is here. Jacob, Hi. We know how your evening's going. How's everyone else doing?
Hockey might still be broken.
Hockey's broken, yes.
Yep. Yeah. I've had an interesting day. I got to interview for my dream job. I hope it went well. But yeah.
We hope so, too. What can we ask what your dream job is?
Well, it is managing a maker lab space at a library.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
very cool.
3D printers and sewing machines and DTF printers and laser engraving and all that sort of stuff.
Is down to fuck printers?
Yes, yes.
I was thinking the same thing.
It's like, this is where we print out the fleshlights.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was told about this, I'm pretty sure it was through the actual message system, and it was written that, and that's what I thought too. So, you know what? That's fair. All of us thought the exact same fucking thing.
Yeah, we did.
Well, it means direct to film. Sure, and it does. It's basically a cool way to transfer designs onto a heat press that you can put on t-shirts. So, yes.
Speaking of t-shirts, people
that's pretty cool. I didn't know you could merch. Yeah, you should check that out, but that is pretty cool. Like, I didn't realize, like libraries had maker spaces that you could, like, do that kind of stuff with t-shirts. That's cool.
Yeah, that's apparently one of their big draws. So yeah.
Yeah, we have a new shirt. Bree had the idea. I made the design.
Well, let's be fair. Injury had the idea, and I translated it, and then we combined the idea to make it the drinking game.
And then we made the shirt, and it is now up for sale. You get it in a variety of colors, and it features four of the most famous catchphrases from the SML podcast, including but not limited to unique. So yeah, to be honest, and fuck.
You know what you didn't include? I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, no, that's true, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. To be honest.
Hey, kids.
Father Mac, you just made a horrible life decision and followed us. Thank you for that. Perfect timing with us talking about the shirt. Welcome in. So good to see you. Yeah, how's everyone doing? Is anyone excited for Grand Theft Auto? Everyone hear about the new leaks going on?
That it's an actual playable build?
The only thing I knew about the leaks is that apparently it lost them $2 million in...
I'm sure these leaks are going to cost them a lot more than...
Oh, no.
Than $2 million. Yeah, it has been years since Grand Theft Auto 5 released. People have been waiting for 6 for ages. It's been like 2 years since the first trailer. Rockstar has been drip-feeding content to their schedule like crazy, and now some leaker came out and is just putting out gameplay videos and other footage, and that's gotta be pissing off Rockstar.
You know, this isn't the first time that's even happened, so you know, if they're getting pissed off, maybe they should figure out who the fuck keeps giving the information out and fire the motherfucker.
It's not information. Like, someone has a playable build of the game that they're taking footage of.
Yeah, and someone had to give them access to that.
Yeah, we don't know who or how, but it is happening. And do you think Rockstar's going to do anything? Do you think they're going to, like, push up the release or maybe just, you know, put some footage out there early?
I think so. I don't think they really feel the need to, because... Even if this person, I mean, they at one point posted, someone posted a whole bunch of shit years ago of it, and they were just didn't even give a damn, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't think they even cared. I think they went after the person for posting it all, but beyond that, they were like, meh.
Yeah. And retired USAF mentioning, like, the someone just bought a prototype of the Elite 3 controller.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Leaks everywhere.
Yeah. Apparently they just got it at some store for like $200. Wow. I don't know if it was like an online transaction or if it was like a pawn shop or what, but it was an unconfirmed prototype of the Xbox Elite 3 controller. It matches all of the leaked descriptions and prototype photos. It has all the features that people have been rumbling about it being in there. Like, I believe they said it has Hall Effect sticks, which would be very nice.
Yeah, it would be.
But, yeah, just a prototype. Just showing up. Hey, how's it going?
That's crazy.
It's crazy. Oh, man. Let's see. What other news do we have this week? Game Pass. We got the latest games coming to Game Pass, and it is another small batch. August 12th, we got Wolfenstein 3D as a sneak edition. August 19th, this week, we got Vaporworld Over the Mind on game preview, which had some controversy about AI in the cutscenes.
Yep.
Yeah. Which had supposedly been removed, but we'll see.
Yep.
Next week on the 25th, Blood Dungeon. Not too sure what that is, but it sounds interesting.
Me either. Yeah.
And then on the 27th, Aki's excited for this one, Resonance, A Plague Tale Legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And then September 1st, Shelldiver.
Can't believe we're already almost in September.
Yep, we are.
No.
And that's the Game Pass update.
Okay.
Very small. And we're losing games, too, because when games join, games have to leave. We are losing another crab's treasure. I Am Your Beast, Neon Abyss, One Lonely Outpost, and The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt.
I gotta debate if I want to take the time to do that new game plus and those DLC achievements for another crab's treasure.
I'd have to start the whole game. I don't think I could beat it fast enough.
But those are all gone. August 31st, and then September 6th, NBA 2K26 is leaving.
Oh, no.
So that was a short stay.
That's what I mean. That's going to affect us, like this group, really badly.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you play Madden and MLB.
Yeah.
So basketball is not out of the realm of possibility for you.
The sports nerd.
Actually, it does. The sneaker noise drives me nuts.
Oh,
on the hardwood floor.
Oh my god, I hate it so much.
Like, I tried to get into basketball as a kid, and it was just like, like all over the floor. Like, nah, like I couldn't do it.
Yeah, now I can hear the noise in my head, and I don't like it.
Yeah, right? You're just like, nah, I'm not going to a basketball game ever. Like,
yeah.
All I can think of is Thornberries now. Thank you.
Thornberries?
Yeah.
Like the wild Thornberries? Like the kid book? Okay, what does that have to do with basketball?
Has to do with the sound that you decided to make for the sneakers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like a monkey.
No, I don't get too excited, Aki, but I was a cheerleader for a short period of time, and now I'm having like flashbacks of like sneakers on the no. Just no.
So yeah, that's Game Pass. 007 First Light has sold 4 million copies.
Deserved. That's a fantastic fucking game.
Yep. And last
I think it's safe to say that on Press Engine, I am not going to get a review copy of it.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, I don't think they need the word of mouth of, you know, the Jacob Gardner bump to sell some more games.
Yeah.
I think they'll be okay.
They recently did an update for the game, adding some more of the TACCOM challenges. Those were fun.
Anyway, last bit of news I have is Compulsion Games has completed their buyout and are now separate from Xbox. Publishing rights for South of Midnight have reverted back to Compulsion, so we may see those games updated and removing the Xbox branding.
I know. Well, is that for the console releases too?
It's for I believe it's for everything.
I had only heard it was confirmed for the Steam version.
Well, I mean, they still have the publishing rights to the game. That I don't know if they're going to remove the Xbox branding or not. They could if they wanted.
I get you. I get you.
But they're the publishers now. They have full control of their IP and their game.
They are the captain now.
Yep. Aki, what news do you have?
Warren Spector has retired from game development. He was the producer behind System Shock, Deus Ex, Epic Mickey, etc., etc.
Ultima.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. And
not mention it.
I've never played it. I don't care about it. And yeah, he decided he was he's done.
I mean, the dude's like 70 years old. So I mean, like,
yeah.
Go enjoy retirement
peacefully into the night.
Yeah, he's been at this for 44 years. So.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Fair on him for wanting to retire and be done and wash his hands of all this shit. Fair enough.
Indeed.
But yeah, he retired. And then Hayden Panettiere. Died. She played the voice of Kari, I believe it was.
Kyrie. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, what happened still hasn't been listed, but yeah.
It sounds like it was a cardiac event that might have come on from an overdose.
Yeah, that's
what that's here. A shame.
Yeah.
Well, like her, if I remember correctly, somebody had said like her brother passed like a few years ago. A
couple years ago, yeah.
From a heart condition. And so I mean, it may have been something that runs in the family.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she had just written a memoir that came out in May, and it talked about stuff like that, her issues with drugs and so on and so forth as well. So no one had listed how she had died. So knowing it was a heart thing, that's at least something. It's a shame. She's way, way too young. Way too young.
Yeah.
But, it sucks. It sucks. And that's all the news I got. You know, I just, you know, have to tell everybody about, you know, retirements and deaths. It's what I do.
Yay. Bree, what news do you have?
So, Turnox is the latest developer publisher to get kicked off of PlayStation. According to their Twitter, they were unilaterally, their contract unilaterally terminated from Sony PlayStation. They didn't give them any reason, it sounds like. And their existing games are scheduled to be removed August
23rd. Damn, that's really quick. They're not really a shovelware publisher.
They do have a couple of games that they published on Xbox that have title updates to them, and a couple of their games are definitely on the easier side of things, but I wouldn't consider them a shovelware developer either.
Yeah, they're not weekly publishing the same Sokoban games.
Right. And they have a new game that was coming out, Stonks 9800. So that's available on Steam.
Use headphones. We can hear us.
I don't really have as much news as I have a discussion I would like to have. It's just something a little different on subjects related to the behind the scenes stuff of what we do here. I watched a Twitter video from Mike Straw of Insider Gaming about his personal opinions and struggles as a game journalist. And it had some key points about changes in search engines, AI, that I found that to be enlightening. My key takeaways from the video were that AI is scraping news and not giving credit, and new search engine pathways are just making it harder for independent media to get notice. And like, we're volunteers doing this as a hobby, and we don't get paid. We just get product for our work, but that doesn't mean that we don't want notice for our, you know, we want the notice to go unnoticed.
I've been plugging away at this for like a third of my friggin' life now.
It's frustrating. So anybody have any thoughts on kind of that idea?
What specifically?
Just, you know, about being a journalist, if you will, that we're doing this, and, you know, how AI is changing the landscape for us as far as getting notice, getting credit for our work.
It sucks because we were already in a sea of flooded news. And now there's just more sites popping up that just have regurgitated AI spam of other sites' work. They're just stealing other sites' posts and AI-ifying them and just throwing more into the flood. And it's getting harder and harder to get noticed. And then you have to worry about things like misinformation. AI will just churn out misinformation and keep that shit going.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of why information literacy is so damn important. Which, I mean, Bree's going to be working at a public library, you know, or hopefully working at a public library soon. You know, and your local public library does offer classes. I mean, I'm not talking about your specific public library, Bree. I mean, like, I'm not creepily, like, figuring out where you're applying for. But generally, folks, like, if you have a public library, Like, they offer classes on information literacy, and if they don't offer classes, talk to their reference librarian. Like, they will be more than happy and probably excited, actually, to help you with this kind of stuff and, like, being able to determine, like, what's a good source and what's not, and, like, how to look out for, you know, AI slop versus, you know, homegrown slop like we do proudly.
Yeah.
AI is to the internet what nuclear bombardment is to the environment. I fully believe in the concept of the dead internet theory, and I think we're well on our way towards it. And this stuff is just one example of how that is seemingly a fact-based opinion and theory.
Gonna say, I'm gonna be really pissed off if I find out Aki's been an AI this whole time, because like three letters in the name and two of them are AI.
No one has met
you or seen you.
Good.
All we know is your voice, so you could be a robot.
It's true. She could
be. Fucking knew it.
Like, I met.
Well, Jacob. I would also bring up a related topic, which is scammers trying to get codes to sell from devs and publishers. So Pirate PR has an illuminating set of tweets about what scammers are saying in their emails to request games that I use as a way to write better emails.
Please link it's frustrating. Me to that, because I will read that.
It's really frustrating to think that I've been doing this over 8 years, Joe's been doing this over 13 years, and we still get rejected because companies are being inundated by bullshit requests, and publishers are tired of betting on small creators who flip keys. Does anybody want to chime in on that nonsense?
I've had personal experience with this as well. This even hits places like the adult game stuff, you know, the stuff that I like to do. I've been rejected because they don't like handing out codes to people because people keep doing shit exactly like that. And it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
It's some bullshit. And I'm very much of the opinion that all scammers, all of them, should be taken out and shot.
No. Yeah.
Just like worldwide.
When I word my emails, I very, very infrequently make it ambiguous to how many keys I want.
Like, yes.
Very, very rarely do I say, we'd love a handful of keys for my team and to maybe do a giveaway. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll say that sometimes to newer people or to people I'm comfortable with that we've done giveaways with before. But most of the time, it's like, I would love to request a Steam key for us to check out on the show, or I would love to request two Xbox keys for my co-host and I to check out on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't ask for a dozen keys. I don't ask for five keys. I'm happy with whatever they send us, if anything. And I stress that, if anything.
Yeah, and one of the things in the email threads that I read, Pirate PR was talking about how you can go and look at some of these companies in the emails that he shows, and they look like legitimate emails. And if you go even look up the companies, they have the right names, they have the right email addresses, they have full websites with reviews on them, but something's not right about them. And it's tough to represent yourself, make sure your branding is on point, that your links are on point, that they're not being duplicated. There are easy ways in an email to change, you know, an O to a zero or a zero to an O, you know, change little things that people won't notice, a font for an A. And that comes back to that, you know, literacy for internet scams and things like that. You just you have to be mindful as a consumer as well as someone who's in this, you know, trying to request stuff. But I just thought this was like an interesting little bit of conversation for us to have here, as, you know, a little of the inside of what goes on here.
Yeah,
I know. It's one of the reasons why I don't like code reselling websites.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're awful.
Like G2A or whatever the fuck it is. Like, places like that shouldn't exist for this, because this is exactly how more than half those keys get on there is shit like that. It's bad people being bad actors. And some of the keys on there are probably legitimately obtained and put on there, but most of them are not. So that's just, it's better just not to have them. Like, there's a difference between, like, most places and a place like Humble or Fanatical or something like that. Those are actual stores. The devs put the keys on there. That's one thing versus, like, something like G2A,
where it's like users selling keys.
Yeah. We don't need users selling keys, because generally users shouldn't be getting keys that they already have the game for, just in general. That's not something a lot of people run into very often. So we don't really need a website that does that. Like,
I get worried when I make a request that someone potentially on the show already made, because I don't want it to look like we're trying to get sneak around limits. And like, Jacob, you really got to let me know when you request stuff on Press Engine, because I don't want to make duplicate requests.
Yeah, I know.
And you tell me when you get stuff, but not when you request stuff.
Well, right, but like when I get something in,
I need to know the first half too.
Hold up, chill. Because the thing is that it's just like the key has come in, but I have not like checked off that box of like I have read the form and like blah 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 blah. I like give me the key. Like, I let you know, and then I can turn it away. You know, if you're like, no, don't, like, you know, all that shit.
That doesn't help if we both already have a request in for a game. Like, I got declined on one that you got.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they want to know beforehand. So
I don't run into stuff
that way like that. It doesn't make the team look like we're trying to get around and get more keys than what's actually needed.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so like I gotta know that kind of stuff. But Bree, any other news that you have?
That was all I had to say. I just like I said, some stuff popped up in my news feed this week, and I thought it was interesting to discuss a little,
because we struggle to make a name in this industry, and we've been plugging away for how friggin' long. And we've established how legit we are. We do our reviews. We don't miss coverage. We do interviews. We welcome people on the show. We show people how legit we are. But, you know, the numbers just aren't there. And that turns people away before they could ever even meet us sometimes. They'll just look at our views and be like, nah, I'm not taking a shot on them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a shame. Like, I understand where devs come from when they're like, we want to obviously give out as few keys as possible, because I'm sure it costs them some amount of money to get those
keys. Depends on the platform. Sure. Xbox, it costs them some money. Steam, I know
it's free.
It doesn't cost them anything.
And you can request more. At least most people can. Not everyone can for some reason, but most places can.
They have harder limits on now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I hear they're doing harder limits with Steam keys, where you get X set amount, and then if you want more keys after that, you have to be approved for them.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because so many shady devs would just request thousands of keys and get trading cards and just spam trading card hours and make money that way.
Yeah, there needs to be some work that needs to be done, but we also really need to get rid of just AI in general. We need to create some sort of program that starts destroying them fundamentally.
Yeah.
Like bug spray does to cockroaches.
Like the company being mentioned in chat right now. Like, I don't know if I shouldn't mention... No, I probably shouldn't mention any names, but... companies we try to avoid working with. Jacob, what news do you have?
Let's see. Alibaba Group has sold off its gaming unit, Lingzi Games, to an Asian private equity firm. Pretty much, it's just like their entire stake in it. And this, I think they make like mobile games. They make Three Kingdoms Strategy Edition, which they make with Koei Tecmo. So, yet another, you know, bullshit, like, you know, trust fund capital company swallows up a video game store studio. Also, I don't know if anybody has seen the stuff about the latest about Star Citizen. They hosted a live stream to show off how this new mission that they're showing off works. And essentially, the devs were about ready to kill each other by the end of the live stream. After, like, they had multiple issues with the game, with the stream, and also they ate shit and, like, they died at the end of the mission. Like, they couldn't beat their own mission. And, yeah, one of the devs told another one to go kill themselves. So,
jeez.
That's,
God damn. No wonder this game's taken. Oh, Jesus.
There's
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half, and, it just did not go well.
That's every episode we do.
It just doesn't go well.
An hour and a half and it doesn't go well.
Let's see. Oh, so if you're in the U.S. Army and you're wondering about it, whether or not you should re-enlist, the Army is now offering you 4 days off to play Grand Theft Auto 6 if you re-enlist for at least 2 years.
Jeez.
Or you could just not re-enlist at all, and then you have as much fucking time as you want off to play it. Ah, there you go, folks.
And then you don't die for oil.
No. You don't die to bomb children.
The director of Tekken 8, Koei Akita, has jumped ship from Bandai Namco to join Harada's Versus studio. So, they're just hemorrhaging talent. That's fun. If you play Among Us, they introduced a new crewmate role, the judge, who can, during emergency meetings, overrule everybody and just decide who gets spaced.
Oh, wow.
Well, that sounds fucking stupid.
I mean, it's... I think they used it for something else, and so, that's right. You can overrule the votes, however, if you're wrong, you die.
Oh, okay, now that's more fair, alright.
Yeah, so, so there's that, War Inspector. Oh, McDonald's. So, in case you're not already paying attention, right now they're running a Godzilla X Hello Kitty Happy Meal thing, which my kids are going absolutely batshit insane for. However, in coming months, they're going to be doing something with Xbox and offering in-game rewards for Halo, Fallout, Forza, World of Warcraft, Candy Crush, and they're going to be offering limited-time menu items. There's going to be some sort of like Halo nuggets, which is some sort of like garlic nugget thing. Candy Crush is going to be getting its own McFlurry. They're going to be doing like some sort of fry thing. There's going to be a sauce that gets, introduced, and Forza is getting I think it's like a sour cherry soda.
Okay. Some of those make sense. I don't know how you get a flavor associated with Halo. That just doesn't compute. Cherry soda makes sense because Japan.
Maybe it floods your flavor. Maybe candy. It floods your mouth with flavor.
No.
You're not allowed to talk.
Unless anymore. That flavor is Mountain Dew, I don't think it should be associated with Xbox.
That's. I don't need popcorn in my mouth.
I know there's a sour cherry Fanta they put out for their Xbox promotion. I didn't like it because it's sour and cherry.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I think it tastes good is because it's sour.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. I mean, because they do have Fanta at McDonald's, so, you know. Also, Marvel Cosmic Invasion is getting new DLC this fall.
Mm.
Tied in with, of course, Doctor Doom for Avengers Doomsday. We're getting the Siege of Castle Doom. Of course, the big bad for it will be Doctor Doom. And we're getting two additional playable characters, but they haven't said who.
Nifty.
A lot of people think it's going to be... the Invisible Woman and Human Torch. And the
Invisible Woman was already in it.
I don't think so.
Oh. Huh.
Did we ever talk about Kingdom Hearts getting an animated series on Disney Plus?
No. Oh shit, no we didn't.
Yeah, so apparently they've got a
Hold on. We got a soundbite for that, people. Come on now.
A movie.
Well, it's close enough, motherfucker.
It's movie watch. There.
Yeah, there's a first poster out for Kingdom Hearts, the animated series. I don't really have any other details on it, just that it's coming to Disney Plus.
Yeah, it got announced at D23. You know, the big Disney convention for Disney nerds.
Yeah.
Which they also briefly announced some Disney Dreamlight Valley stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very exciting, in my opinion. Which, of course, now I'm going to tell you about it. So, free content coming later this year. Lilo and Oogie Boogie are coming to Disney Dreamlight Valley. So the characters from Lilo and Stitch and Nightmare Before Christmas. And then there is actually going to be a paid expansion this year. And they've shown off a little bit of clips from it. And it looks like we're going to be going under the sea. And we saw some mermaids floating around. And a lot of people think that this means that we're going to get to be mermaids in specific areas of... you know, the valley. A lot of people also think that it's finally pointing towards the Atlantis stuff that's been there since launch. But the big reveal at the very end of the trailer is Jack Sparrow. So the first live action character from any Disney property. Well, I mean, I guess R2-D2 and BB-8, I guess they're first human live action character is going to be brought in, so that's kind of interesting.
Neat.
No release date announced yet, but you know it's coming later this year.
Okay,
it's good talk.
You're supposed to let us know if you're done or if you have more so that they're
I'm done.
All right, should we get to reviews?
Yeah.
Because we got a bunch of games to talk about tonight. Let us kick things off with Madden NFL 27, developed, published, and provided to us for coverage by EA. Released August 18th, Xbox Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5, PC, $69.99. Run the league one decision at a time. EA Sports Madden NFL 27, powered by the all-new Persona engine, transforms franchise into a reactive, always evolving league where every NFL athlete has a distinct, realistic personality that informs their motivations, demands, and reactions. Jacob, what is going on in the new iteration of Madden NFL for 2027?
So, Madden, honestly, like, This year, it feels like it actually got an overhaul compared to previous years. And I know last year I was glossing a lot on like just how beautiful the game looked, and like because they finally had definitely updated the graphics and everything. This year, lots of changes to the gameplay. Surprising. Especially after, like, you know, the running joke for so many years had been, like, ugh, they're just releasing the same game over and over again. Now, if you remember my discussion with the college football title from last month, and how I had talked about how passing in that game seemed really different. Like, you know, it's like now also, like, I was also responsible for the receiver as well. And I wondered if that was just like, you know, that was like a gameplay thing to separate, you know, college football from Madden. No, that looks to be the new normal. So, so yeah, there's actually a bunch of changes with this game. So for those, like, and it's kind of wild, like, how much actually has changed in the game, that it's just like, I almost don't know where to begin. But I guess I'll go with the gameplay change. So with this, as a quarterback, like previous Madden games, it used to just be, you're the quarterback, you toss the ball, and you hope that the game AI catches it. Now, you're actually responsible for the quarterback and the person who's going to be catching the ball. And what the game does is that you have to hold a button at a specific point, and the receiver, you know, provided that you didn't hold it for too long or like too short of a time, pretty much it'll highlight green if it's good. But yeah, like you're now responsible for it, and it is wild, because finally, guess what? It's now your fault if the guy doesn't catch the ball. Like,
I mean, it was always your fault anyways.
Well, usually it was my fault because I threw it to the wrong guy, but now it's just like, you know, you could be responsible for fumbling this, but at the same time now, like, you've got more, like, way more control over the whole thing, and it definitely feels like it's more like you're more involved. Like, I don't want to call it like a sim, but like it really feels like EA is pushing for you to be able to control every single aspect of the game. And if you're wondering, like, if you're like, holy crap, this does sound overwhelming, thankfully EA made a change with the menus. Like, holy crap. And guess what? There's now a tutorial section.
Like, yay.
It's not hidden, like, under all sorts of stuff. And so, like, EA has realized, like, yo, like, you know, we're introducing a bunch of new stuff. We better show, like, we better make it clear to everyone how to how to be able to play this kind of stuff. Because for so long, it almost seemed like this was, like, generational knowledge. And, like, you know, if you didn't, like, if you weren't playing Madden years ago, like, you're just going to get left behind. And so they're really trying to make it more accessible for everybody. And I was actually playing it with my son, my oldest son, because we're in a new school district. He's going to public school, and he was like, you know, like the kids are probably going to be playing this as opposed to the kids at the Quaker school. You know, believe it or not, Quakers are really not big on high impact, violence prone sports. Yeah, but yeah, like there's tutorial stuff, and it goes over, you know, this is how you're going to be passing. This is how you're going to be receiving. This is how, like, you know, you control all this different stuff. Here's how you kick the ball. And it's like, as I said, it's not only is everything up front and center, but it's like accessible, and it explains it well. And I'm looking forward to my oldest kid kicking my butt in this game. Like, but yeah, so that's like the big change with gameplay. Also, there's a couple of new positions that you can mess around with. Tight end. Oh shoot. It's some sort of runner. I forget what it was called. But anyway, But yeah. And then another big change with this is the franchise mode. And this is where, like, they've really gone into, like, some nitty-gritty sim stuff. Like, so every single player on your team has, like, all these different, I mean, they have different play styles, obviously, and, like, the different stats of how they do stuff, but they also have, like, different, like, values in terms of, like, you know, what they're looking out for in a game and what they want to do, and, like, where they're trying, like, where they want their career to go and how they actually react to the other teammates and stuff like that. And so you actually have to, like, take control of these, like, players, and you're gonna need to do lots of practice stuff, and, like, that has been a thing before, and it's usually in the form of, like, some sort of mini games, and the mini games are, they're pretty much either, like, oh, this is pretty fun, or it's, like, same old, you know, like, you know, toss the ball in through these hoops, like, within a, like, a certain amount of time, that kind of stuff. And there are some that are just plain tedious, like, you know, doing dashes and all that kind of stuff. But one that I thought that that was pretty cool that I don't recall from other years. It may be, like, I think it's new. I'm not entirely sure, so don't quote me on it. But, there's one where you're a wide receiver and you just have to run up and down the field, avoiding three other guys. And also, they've set up, like, what's essentially like a obstacle course, like, on the field. Like, so there's, like, these padded walls that you also have to avoid, while you're running around and, like, you know, just trying to stay untouched for, like, a minute. Honestly, that was probably the most fun one out of all of them. And just, like, watching, like, these big, huge, like, defender guys, like, just get absolutely clobbered, by, you know, by, like, objects on the obstacle course. But yeah. And so that's honestly, it's drastically changed, like, the franchise mode, and it definitely makes it more hands-on, more sim-like. Yeah, like, it's wild how much has actually changed with that. And of course, there's always Ultimate Teams. You know, that is the mode where pretty much it's just like you're ripping open these packs of football cards and you're just building your team as you want to, like, you know, and being able to use who you want. You know, I don't know all the different football players, so it's never been, like, a big draw for me, but, like, I get why other people, like, would do it. I mean, it's essentially fantasy football, except you're getting to play as the team that you're building. But yeah, online is smooth. I never had any issues connecting, with other players. You know, it was easy playing against my son on our TV. Like, and it was just fun. Like, you know, like, once you're past the hurdle of, like, oh my God, like, you know, there's actually new stuff. Actually new stuff that I need to learn. Like, you know, it's pretty damn fun. I'm still kind of crap at getting used to the you know, controlling the passing from the quarterback to, like, a wide receiver. And honestly, for quick plays, it's not as good because you really have to, like, you know, you're throwing it and then you have to, like, you know, hit the correct button at the correct time, for your wide receiver to catch it. And so as I said, if you're doing, like, a quick play, like, it's a lot harder to do. But yeah, like, my only complaint, honestly, is the menus. And that's just, like, it's loading times. And I know that they have updated it since then, and it doesn't seem as bad as when it first launched, but it's still, like, it's noticeably slow in between stuff. College football also had this issue too. So I'm hoping that'll get
in general.
Yeah. Like, and so I'm hoping that like that gets ironed out like pretty soon, because it's annoying. Like, it's not game breaking. And of course, yeah, like, you know, it's Madden. And so like, also like the camera can get wonky at times, and like, you know, it'll go through a player. And so like the camera will initially be like inside, you know, the player's body instead of like, you know, looking down on the field or something like that. But like that's standard Madden stuff, which we've all come to know and love. So, yeah. But yeah, like it's been like, this is fun. And like, and if you've been like for a while, you know, just be like, I don't know if I want to pick up Madden. This is a good time to get back in. Like, it really is. Madden is like, the game is willing to teach you how to play all over again. It wants to teach you the new systems. Like, and it's super accessible to get it done. Like, so honestly, like, you know, for as much criticism as the series has had over the last like 15 years, EA is visibly making improvements on this. Like, I'm impressed with it.
Very good. Well, it clocks in at $69.99. What is your verdict?
I mean, like, so if you're a football head, or like even somebody who like plays sports games occasionally, like, I think it's definitely worth it. If you're somebody like Aki, who does not give a flying, you know what, about sports games, you're probably not going to be interested in this. Like,
no,
but you know, I think it's worth it. Like, this is a solid, you know, this is a solid entry into Madden. And I think it's honestly going to be looked back at pretty fondly, you know, at the very least, for what, like, what new ideas it's bringing to the table. Like, it's definitely not like a stale entry. So yeah. I think you should definitely like check this one out.
Very good. All right, let's move on to The Sinking City 2, developed and published by Frogwares. It released August 18th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $49.99. The Sinking City 2 is a third-person survival horror set in 1920s Arkham. Deliberate, tense, and resource-lean, pressure builds as you push deeper, relief comes in brief refuge, and fear is something you manage. Mind your inventory. Take on unnerving puzzles and double back via unlock shortcuts for supplies and upgrades. Bree and Aki, both of you played this. Bree, start us off. What is The Sinking City 2?
So yeah, The Sinking City 2 is set in 1929-style noir fictional Massachusetts. This follows Calvin and Faye, his partner. They got a special book. They tried to contact a god in the dream world, and Faye got trapped there in some kind of coma. Some of the exposition of the story is told as Calvin, takes care of her, talks to her. The info is reinforced with writing and more detail in the book excerpt we can pick up to view again later in our Codex library. The city of Arkham is flooded. People are being encouraged to evacuate. You'll need to use boats to access places. There's a new threat in this game called the Slither that's bringing people back to life in a twisted fashion. And these bloodworms are why we can't swim in the water, and we have to be careful around it. The story was pretty darn good. It's told in cutscenes throughout chapters, through notes you find for investigations and the like. And Faye's story is told mostly in these flashbacks. Like different cutscenes, and we have some indication of how the two met and fell in love and got into the occult situation they're in today. And I don't want to give away too much of the story, obviously, because spoilers, but things are never as easy as they seem. You get one piece of the puzzle and have to solve another to get a related task before you get back to the original problem. And that's just kind of how the story unfolds. And when those cutscenes hit, it's really great. There are difficulty settings for the game with the investigations and the combat separately. So for combat, there are four difficulties: Sweet Dreams for story focus, Restless Slumber, which is the normal setting, and then Hard and Sleep Demon challenge levels. And then for the investigations and puzzles, you get two difficulties, Breezy or Brainy. If you're experienced and willing to read details and take some notes, Brainy isn't that bad. The original Sinking City was more of an investigation game with combat elements. This game pivots toward survival horror. Horror. I can say that word. there are still investigations that give you points for progressing in the game, and you might read a bunch of things that'll lead you to some new conclusions in the story, and that'll give you upgrades for your character as well. There's a system of feats you can do in the game to earn Eldritch points, which allow you to unlock skins and weapons and concept art, which is pretty cool. But being that this is a survival horror akin to something like Resident Evil, there is an inventory system where you have limited space. And boy, do you have limited space. Yes, it is painful at first. Oh, no. Some items take up more space than others, and you'll need to adjust and fiddle with it accordingly. It was pretty mild in terms of how much time I spent fiddling, but it is worth mentioning. There are save rooms you can stash things in. They're pretty numerous. This is a familiar system they adjusted to make their own. You save on gramophones. And the save room has like a symbol on the door so you know what it is. There are some auto-saves, too, at key moments, but I wouldn't rely on those if you can help it. There's also a crafting system for healing items, ammunition, and more. You'll scavenge things, turn them into other things. Like most survival horror with inventory management systems, you're going to spend a decent amount of time playing with that. I can't stress that enough. It's not super bad in this game. It's just you have very limited inventory when you start.
Yeah.
Aki, you were gonna say? I'd like to add with that. You're constantly picking stuff up, thankfully, and you have a nice little map.
Yes.
You do have to pick it up in each area, but you always find one pretty much right in front of your face soon after you enter an area. And when you open it, the rooms that you've been through will change to a color. And then once you find all the shit in that room,
it
will change to a different color. So you know you've finished it.
Yeah,
it's like
blue and red. Yeah.
Very helpful.
Yeah, there is a new game plus mode to add some replayability. But let's talk about the gameplay. Yeah, this is a third-person 3D game. You move around environments pretty freely, going back and forth to discover clues and explore environments for notes and pictures and the like to flesh out the story. There are points of no return in the story, however, and you should be mindful if you care about finding everything and doing all the investigations and doing all the puzzles, because some of them are technically optional. But there is a chance you could really miss some good secrets if you just amble on toward the plot when you have unresolved puzzles and treasures. So beware if you're looking for a complete run-in-one. You're able to shoot things, stomp, move obstacles, duck or crawl. Honestly, stomping is a huge mechanic in this. You've also got a haymaker you can do, and when you run out of ammo, your options are to punch and stomp your way to victory, because ammo is super precious in this.
Yeah, and realistically, if your only options left are to stomp or haymake something, your best option is run the fuck away.
Yeah, that is a valid option in this. So combat is interesting because it's not all headshots. There are these little pustule clusters that appear on the body.
I mean, not what we're fighting in this game. In the first game, it was like weird monsters. In this one, it's basically zombies.
Kind of, yeah. They're taken over by the worms, and you get these little pustule clusters that you aim for, and that'll drop them down. But if you don't stop the worms, they'll slither and take the body over again. So this is where that stopping mechanic really comes in handy. And another thing to note about enemies, is kind of resource related. Different enemy types have different weapons or ammo you'll need to use to efficiently kill the targets. Different target areas other than headshots. Some of them are headshots. Those little like spider dog things are honestly, if you can just like jump back from their attack and then walk forward, it is fastest to just stomp them. So there's a good amount of fighting strategy that goes into playing in addition to the resource management. There's also a decent amount of puzzles to solve besides the investigations I mentioned earlier. And the basic loop of the game in each chapter is that there's some kind of problem to solve, like opening a gate so you can boat over to the library, but the person who opens the gate is dead. And there'll be like a puzzle-based solution, like figuring out the fuses in the box, but first you have to do an investigation to find them. And then there'll be some kind of confrontation at the end of the chapter, and that's the gist of how it goes.
I have another thing to add to this. As been mentioned, there's investigations. The first game, the investigations were a lot like the Frogware Sherlock games, where, you know, you're rebuilding a crime scene, you're figuring out what goes in what order, you're looking for clues so you know what all happened, so you can figure out what goes in what order. This one, it's more like just the Mind Palace part of the Sherlock games, where you're connecting stuff together, and that's it.
So there are a good amount of separate audio sliders in the settings. There's a setting for headphones or for speakers. You can go with performance or quality in your video. Accessibility settings include aim assist, slow down, quick time options, and inverts. You can also adjust sensitivity, dead zones, and more on your controller. It's a good amount of settings to customize gameplay for your comfort. This is a Frogwares game. The graphics are awesome. There's a lot of moving parts, things that writhe and wriggle, and the whole world feels alive with tree movement and waving flags and moving water. There's fantastic lighting effects, rain effects, where you can see the drops, the water in like puddles. The reflection work is fantastic. Textures were spot on, gave depth. They still need to work on hair a little. There were even parts of the game where you can use left bumper to focus on and like zoom in and just take in the surrounding. There were times where you'd be like on a boat going through the city, and there were people in the buildings you were passing, like doing their own things. It was impressive how much life there was to this world. There's also a photo mode, which kind of brings up another point for me, the city as a character. It's a decaying world. It looks like it's war-torn, and besides the floods ruining things and making islands of terrain for people to live on, the buildings have holes in them. There's crumbling bits and barriers and debris, and it was more than just the environment you were walking through to get to the story. It told the story as well, and I really appreciated that. Audio-wise, first of all, I always recommend headphones. Second, to note that I love the credits song. I look forward to seeing if there's an official soundtrack for this at some point. The game is wet, and you can hear it. The little splashes, the little skitters and noises of enemies coming up. Yeah, it's excellent. The soundscape in this is excellent. If you like Lovecraftian horror, I think they nailed the feeling. It's unsettling, it's wet and squishy. You get that feeling you really shouldn't be there. There's familiar locations that you've read about or heard about in other Lovecraft media, like Miskatonic University. So it's going to be familiar to you. For me, there was some not so great stuff. I did play this pre-release, so some of the things may be addressed with early patches. There were some enemies that would occasionally get stuck on terrain, but I used that to my advantage. There were some voice to lip sync issues that I noticed in the opening cinematic. The flashlight would turn off randomly, and I'd have to turn it back on. I don't know why that was.
It doesn't just like to just turn off either. It likes to start flickering and then turn off, and then you have to turn it back on. And that really sucks for me personally. I don't like when it does that.
Yeah. There wasn't a lot of tutorial in this. If you've played other games of this type, you might be okay. But it actually hit me 4 hours into the game that I just didn't know how to dodge and that there was a dodge, which, I mean, it's B. How much more obvious could it be? But
you also
had trouble
getting into the Mind Palace area for the investigation too.
I wasn't exactly sure where that was at first. So I feel like while there was explanation of some elements in the game, some of the basic stuff was just glossed over under the expectation you've played games before, which is good and bad.
I'm not sure that's actually the case. It may have actually told you, but most of the instructions in this are like off to the side.
Yeah, like
it
I'm
just
glad
gets you quick, like, oh, this is how you do this, and you don't have to actually do that at that point or anything.
Yeah, so I'm glad
and
it
goes away.
Didn't beat me over the head and assume I was a complete noob, but a little more like, hey, here's a tutorial would have been nice. And this may just be me. Even with a map, sometimes I felt like I got lost a lot. I'm not sure how much of that was game design and how much of that was me being on stream in a dark game with monsters everywhere, talking to people. But I did feel like maybe it was intentional, maybe it wasn't. I felt like I got lost a lot. And then the last little kind of negative, you know, thing I want to nod to here, I felt like the Slither enemy was kind of hard to suss out. You have these whole piles of them you can stomp. Sometimes it matters and sometimes it doesn't. And it seemed kind of arbitrary, and that was a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Before I like hand over to Aki, I want to just say on the tail end of all the little, you know, pile of not great stuff I mentioned, I also want to point out that this game was made in the Ukraine between January 2023 and now. And if you don't get the gravity of that, I'll spell it out like they do in the beginning screen of the game. The country was being invaded by Russia. Their homes were being damaged from bombings. 14 of their staff were drafted into the war, and they still made an awesome game that you should support. And if you haven't played the original game, since this is a sequel, never fear. The original and remastered games go on generous sale regularly, and it takes under 4 hours to play, so not a huge barrier to access for this game. Aki, tell me more of your thoughts on it.
You did actually cover most of the stuff I would have said about the game. The only extra little bit that I would have said is I really like the cinematics for the game. Yes. You get two different types. Some of them are, you know, obviously your character enters an area and he meets somebody. Okay, that's the now. He also has a lot of points where he's reminiscing about stuff. Yes. Where he met his partner, Faye. And those are so fucking cute. I love how they interact with each other.
They're so good.
They're both that little bit of like, I'm a little spicy, a little saucy, and I don't know you, or now we know each other and we can still poke at each other for fun. I loved how they interacted with each other. Every time we got one of those old reminiscing flashback stuff, those were like some of my favorite parts of the game because they were just chef's kiss perfect.
Yeah.
I had a lot of trouble with the shooting, though. For the person who's usually pretty good at shooters, I was not good at this. I need to use the accessibility options.
Yeah. Aim assist was very helpful.
Yeah, I'm going to need to flip that on pretty hard. Usually I turn that stuff off and I'm pretty good. And I played this like Joe plays shooters and I felt bad.
Haha, you suck. $50 on The Sinking City 2. What do you two think?
I feel like the Lovecraftian theme was well handled. The tension and pacing was great. I think the replayability is high with a new game plus, and that helps justify the price. I honestly think Sinking City 2 is probably Frogware's new best game. And I think if you're trying to get like an accessible survival horror experience, this is worth a look. I'm not great at survival horror typically, and I actually succeeded at this and had fun. The premium edition comes with an additional mission. So I know you'll mention that probably here too, but I would go for that personally. This is a buy it for me. Aki?
Premium also comes with some outfits.
It does,
one
yes.
of them, I flipped one of those immediately because it looked fucking awesome. I'm so for this. I've never found a Frogware game that I don't absolutely love, and this game has not changed that whatsoever. Yeah. So good on them. It's worth all the money, and I hope they make all the money for it because it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Very good. And as you mentioned, there is a deluxe edition that includes the Arkham Field Kit, which is just
some skins,
outfits and some equipment that you could use early in the game for a little boost. That normally runs $8. It's $5 extra to get that. And then there is the Holloway Manor, which is in the premium edition, which is $10 more. But that includes the field kit and the Holloway Manor, which is $12.99. Yes. So you're basically saving $10 if you get the premium edition.
Yeah, and I would recommend getting the premium edition, especially if you played the first one and you liked it. If you're in for the survival horror in this, I think you're going to enjoy this a lot, and that extra mission is going to be worth it.
Yeah, if you like Frogware, definitely just go ahead and
get
the premium. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, up next is The Lord of the Rings War in the North Legacy Edition, developed by Snowblind Studios and Aspyr, published by Aspyr, released August 11th on Xbox Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5, and PC for $19.99. A shadow rises in the north. Step into a darker, grittier Middle Earth where war rages beyond the Fellowship's path. The Lord of the Rings War in the North expands Tolkien's epic legendarium, delving into the brutal, untold legend of Agendar, a servant of Sauron who has rallied an immense force in the forest, in the ruins of Fornost. While Frodo and Samwise embark on their journey to Mount Doom, a new Fellowship must rise and defend the North. Let this be the hour when we draw swords together. Bree, I was so friggin' excited when this, stealth snuck out. Out of nowhere, this game existed.
So this is like super wild, but the day before this shadow dropped, I was actually having a conversation with my husband about this game and the fond memories of it. I last played this on 360 in 2011, so it's been like 15 years, which is long enough to have some surprises for me in the story and the gameplay, though. And the Legacy Edition is a remaster of the original, so we'll talk about it as such. But the gist is that three people met with Aragorn a few days before Frodo starts his journey, and they head to lands to do their part in the story, and it's pretty epic. Combat and story sequences play a lot like the movies, which is good because our story crosses over into the story we all know and love. We're at some of the locations we know at different times. We deal with familiar characters or related ones like Elrond's sons. We meet Bilbo at some point. Our job is to distract the enemy, cause some trouble so that Frodo and the Fellowship can do their job. I feel like the story is only so deep. While it plays on the history we know, it doesn't try to do anything to add new lore. Good thing for purists. And it played well, but it also played along. We kind of know the basic outcome because we've seen the stories before. There isn't any real deep character building here, but it's not just fan service either. So some of the story is told through, you know, NPCs you can talk to with conversation trees, and you can acquire different things in a wheel to investigate further. But the gameplay is really the real feature in this. We get three playable heroes you can switch between at will. They will all join you regardless of who you choose, just as AI companions. They are Farron, the Dwarven Champion of Erebor, Andriel, the Elven Loremaster, or Mage of Rivendell, and Eridan, the human Dunedain Ranger. And switching characters is actually new to this edition of the game. If you decide halfway through you're better suited solo with Andriel for some reasons, like using the magic, you can play her at the same level as the ranger you've been building, for example. You just have to keep updating those characters as you go through your playthrough. Each character has some secrets only they can find in the game. There are hidden things behind breakable walls. The dwarf can break, the ranger has stashes, and whatever elven shit Andriel does to find special loot, I don't know. Also new to this edition is the companion meters. Previously, you could not see the health and stamina of your companions, but now in this you can, which is great for multiplayer. Customizing your appearance is a thing. I don't know if that's new, but it's limited to about 5 presets per category, of which there are just like some beards and hair color and eye color and hairstyle and stuff like that. Nothing major, but you do have some customization available to you. But yeah, this is an action RPG. The combat's pretty fluid for what it is. You have multiple types of attacks, an upgrade system. There are limbs you can sever, and it gets kind of gory without the blood splatter. You've got block, attack, roll, you can switch between melee and you've got combo attacks, you've got heavy attacks, and Beleriand the Eagle to just like call in and swoop down, and he's a giant eagle. You save, it's fun. You can jump on a ballista and just rapid fire at enemies climbing over walls. And there are story elements to play here, or play with, I guess. In between waves of enemies, you need to interact with siege engines to destroy them. You'll have to find levers or find loot that you need to upgrade. There'll be sections with gimmicks like exploding enemies that you need to shoot, or defending allies while they work their magic to get a door open. And the enemies sometimes come from unexpected and, you know, fun places, like the goblins will crawl over the walls or the ceilings, and it's very cinematic in its presentation, like the whole thing is. It's a linear progression of story for the most part. You have like little segments of fighting, triggers of action or cutscenes, and then more fighting. There's like these little segments where you have to kind of gather your party. You can take that time to upgrade. It's a little slow in the sense that this is, you know, still built off of an older game, but I mean, the load screens and things didn't seem to take very long. Multiplayer was pretty easy to sort out. You can only have three people playing, so it's just a matter of agreeing on who gets to play who. The party leader does the interactions for the most part. The guests just kind of fights. Chests are unique to each player, but for whatever reason, it does not save progress for anyone other than the host, as Joe found out. So that sucks.
Yeah, I don't really know what happened. Like, I don't know if it's because I hadn't started a game and I just started fresh, or
yeah, if, it's not like, save progression.
Later when I joined your game again, I wasn't that far in the story, so I don't know if maybe if you would have joined me, like if your character would have kept progression or not, but I really don't know.
Yeah, I'm not really sure with that. So the host, we either did something wrong or the progress saves only for the host, which is kind of a negative for me. You can also gift items to other people in your team from your inventory, which makes loot more interesting. You might find axes you have no use for as a ranger, but might help the champion, and you could save it or you could sell it to get money to upgrade your equipment. Leveling is based on how many kills you get, and if your buddies are getting more kills than you, like Joe was just kind of mopping things up over there in his corner with a dwarf, you might not level as fast. Like, I did not level as fast as you when we were playing together. You were definitely getting most of the kills.
Yeah.
Until I got on the ballista, and then I, like, got a ton of XP just firing away. And Joe actually was the one, he mentioned the ability to lock on enemies at some point with the right stick, and I looked it up, that's actually new to the Legacy Edition, so is autosaves. So they've definitely added some improvements to this game to make it more accessible to a modern audience. There is an equipment management component. You'll need to deal with weapon durability, upgrading gear, managing inventory. You can always travel back to Bree and see the blacksmith if you hit an area transition or a magical shop. The game's achievement list is identical to the original, I think. It means you'll need to get two friends to hit enemies together, which is a little complicated, just like in the original. You'll also need to unlock legendary difficulty by completing normal and then heroic difficulty if you want all the achievements.
Was a tough one.
yeah. There are apparently some grumbles online, people calling this a lazy port, and I think there's more to it than that. The graphics are still a bit dated, but the graphics are not just upscaled either. It looks like the original in so many ways, but it's cleaner, it's less janky. There were even some good like smoke effects and water and fire stuff that looked refined. And I went back and looked at some old gameplay footage on PS3 and Xbox 360, and this was a good visual port, in my opinion. The characters in the old footage look squished somehow. Also, looking at things like the ballista usage, it feels less zoomed in, so I could see, like, I had better peripheral vision, which was, you know, easier for fighting. Some bad things to note. I did run into a situation where I reloaded the game, or until I reloaded the game, I should say, my character's ranged weapons were on some auto dry fire, and I could no longer glean arrows off the ground at the same time. So it was like I was out of arrows, but the animation kept rapid fire. Thing.
You keep cutting out. I don't know if it's your noise gate or what.
Oh no, sorry. Yeah. But there's a particular segment with like these kamikaze goblins you needed to hit. Frustrating to have this like glitch with my arrows, but overall I had a great time with this one.
Yeah, I am thrilled this one came back and got a fresh lease on life, even though I played what, like 2 hours online with you and I had to start over. I happily did and am now back to like where we were playing together again with friggin' whites.
Oh, yeah, the barrows.
Oh, my God. And I completely missed a cave there. I don't know how.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Huh. There was the quest to, like, go to the three caves. I got the first and third. I somehow completely missed the second along with two secrets. So, yay. The biggest surprise for me with this is the price.
Yeah.
I did not expect this to come out as cheap as it did. It clocks in at only $20. What are your thoughts?
I think this is better than just the nostalgia. I think this held up pretty well as a game. It was speedier than you might realize, even though there is no run button. I really enjoyed this. I think at that price, I have to give it a buy it.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It is one of my favorite games on two gens ago. And I'm glad it got brought back. It's one of those titles I never thought we would see again, but I am so glad that we did.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's move on to yet another Zombie Survivors, developed and published by Awesome Game Studio, released August 20th on Xbox One and Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and a 1.0 PC release for $14.99. The Switch release is coming later on this year. The Horde is coming, but you're ready to fight. Assemble your team and decide upon their enhancements to find the most efficient synergies against thousands of the undead. Survive, then evolve, then break all of the limits in this deceivingly simple but addictive reverse bullet hell. Jacob and Aki, both of you played this. Jacob, start us off. What is yet another Zombie Survivors?
Oh, God. You know, this game's just an absolute snooze fest. You know, there's... I can't think of any redeeming qualities about it. Can you know? I'm only 17 fucking hours into this game. Holy fucking shit! Like, you know, I had work the next day, and then I'm up at four. I'm up till four in the morning, blasting away zombies. Holy shit! Like, this game is a fuck ton of fun. I have played so many subpar zombie games. Or not zombie games, but survivors games for this podcast. And yeah, this one just completely blew all my fucking expectations with it. So first off, there's a story in this. Like, there's an actual story, believe it or not. Like, oh my God. Like, it's not just like, oh, here's some sprites and like go kill some other sprites. No, there's missions like in this. And granted, like, you could fail missions, but the game will just throw it back at you, like, you know, after you've completed a couple of other ones. But there are 9 different classes in this, like tank, medic, SWAT, which is like a guy who just shoots lots of gun stuff, which really doesn't differentiate all that much from tank, but shut up, it does. Mechanic, Huntress, there's also like a Ranger, a Pyro, who I absolutely love. And yeah, it's just like, as you go through this game, you assemble a team of 3. If you want to run it solo with only one person, you totally can. There are achievements for doing that. But you can have a team of maximum of 3 characters, which you build up during your 20-minute runs or more. I mean, you could do like endurance runs too if you want, and that just runs till you're fucking dead. While you're doing this, you're collecting XP, you're collecting cash. The XP will allow you to upgrade your different abilities and your weapons. During the run, the cash gains like general points that will affect everybody post run. And that's stuff like health, you know, luck, like weapon damage, ability damage, all that kind of stuff. But then the various classes, you know, depending on how many zombies they killed and like what they did and all that kind of stuff during your run, they collect their own points afterwards, which you could use to upgrade stuff. And like so many other games, there are synergies between stuff, but it's synergies between classes with this game. And so, like, you know, if the medic and the SWAT are working together, like, you know, that does something. Or if, like, the pyro and the tank are together, like, the tank's mines will now suddenly also have burn damage as well. like, I think, like, the SWAT guy, like, if he's with the pyro, I think it makes the automatic turret, I think that now also shoots fire, too.
Ooh.
Yeah, like, there's all sorts of shit, and, like, you know, and some of it's, like, goes beyond, like, the little synergy stuff, too. Like, you know, like, because you could do all these friggin' upgrades to all your, like, to your abilities and stuff. Like, one of my favorites that I was like, ooh, like, this is sexy. The tank, he has these, like, murder drones that just, like, float around him. Kind of like the, I'm trying to think of, like, what it was, like, back in, Vampire Survivors. It was, like, the Bibles that could float around your body and stuff like that. They're very similar to that, but you could eventually upgrade them so that, like, not only do you have more of them, but they're also alternating between fire and ice damage. And it's like, and so you're just like, cruising through all these, like, piles of zombies, and bosses and stuff like that. And, like, you just have, like, the absolutely insane, like weapons and stuff like that. And also, like, the tank, who I really love, like, eventually you could give that guy a minigun and, like, you're just mowing through everybody. And it's just 20 minutes of just straight up fucking carnage. Like, oh my God, I'm having so much fun with this damn game. Like, I it's easy to lose, like, 4 or 5 hours just playing it. Like, you never get bored. Like, I think there's, like, 5 maps total, but, like, with the mission requirements of, that you get with playing the story, you know, it always changes stuff up, and so it's, like, there might be a difficulty change, there might be, like, you might have to have, like, X amount of things in your inventory, you might have to respond to so many SOS signals, and stuff like that. And the game also introduces a mechanic where, like, you're trying to collect these, samples, and you have a limited amount of time to do it. And so, like, you're trying to, like, run around and grab all these samples and bring them back to the bio thing. And if you do that, if you're successful with it, it gives you a huge boost, for, like, one of, like, your elemental kind of things. So, like it could increase, like, your burn stats or your kinetic weapon stats or, like, your electricity, you know, and so, like, you could cause even more carnage and mayhem as you're messing everybody up. And it's just, this is a lot of fucking fun. Like, I was vaguely sad that, I was sad that, like, this thing was under embargo until today. Cause, like, I just wanted to, like, throw it up on Twitch and just, like, be streaming this for everybody. Like, I know
for all the people that watch the silent streamer.
Yo, fuck you. I know people. I do have some people who are like, oh, I'm going to just pop in and see what Jacob plays and stuff like that. Like, I do have some friends from work who do that. So anyway, fucker. Like, yeah, like, no, like, I wanted to stream this thing. I bet you could suck my dick. No. So anyway,
won't happen.
Anyway, but yeah, like, I'm having a shitload of fun with this game. Like, this is great. This is easily the most addictive game I've played in 2026. Which the devs were highly appreciative of that message that you sent to them.
Yeah, it is. I've been playing this one not as much as you, but it is still very easy to lose yourself in this game and just say, hey, I'm going to make a run. I'm going to do a run.
And then, yeah, 5 runs later.
How much of a lie that was to yourself.
Oh yeah, because you're like, oh well, shit! I just upgraded all this stuff. I need to go see how that works. Yeah. All right, one more run. Okay, well, I just got this new synergy. Let's see how that does. Like, oh one my
more
god,
run. One more.
Yep, one more. You know, well, it's 4 a.m. Who needs fucking sleep?
No, like, one.
Nobody.
That's $15. What do you think of yet another Zombie Survivors?
Abso-fucking-lutely. Best $15 that you'll spend.
Very good. I agree.
I agree.
I forgot you were chiming in on this. You didn't say anything.
Yeah, once he stopped talking, you were already talking, so...
Well, go ahead, Aki. What do you think of this one?
I think it's a pretty good game. Yeah, I don't usually play games like this, because usually they're not great for my eyes, and this one... thankfully has some nice little settings that make it a little safer for me. Like you can make all the effects and stuff more and more translucent until they're just invisible, which is really nice because it makes it significantly safer for me to play, which was pretty kick ass. And yeah, I actually enjoyed myself with this, and I think I might actually be working towards 100%ing this.
I'm definitely gonna try.
Be hard.
Oh yeah, no doubt. But you know what? I'm still gonna try it.
100%, and it ain't gonna be hard. It's just gonna take a very long fucking time.
Speaking of which, one of the things I do like about this is like some of the items that you could pick up. Like one of them's called the Last Unicorn, and it makes everybody explode into glitter. Like instead of blood everywhere, it's just glitter, and you can combine it with any other animal related item. So there's one that's called the giant crab, which if you get a shot that is critical on a full, it's like fuck, it's like if you get a, like if you do critical damage on an enemy, it's like whatever, like the your final shot to destroy them with, it does 2.5 times of damage to like surrounding guys. Oh my god, it's like, it's just like how much you could like just like tinker with everything just to like make it so you could fuck everybody's day up so much. Like I love this, like it's so good.
All right, and as we stated, it is $15. If you buy it in the next week, it is on sale for $11.99. But $15, Jacob, you liked it. Aki, what was your verdict?
I'm totally for it. I think it's a really fun little game. I actually enjoyed myself with it, so yeah.
All right. Let's move on to Ambrosia Sky, developed by Soft Reins and Blackbird Interactive, published by Soft Reins and Exothermic, released November 10th on Steam for $14.99, and Act 2 just launched August 6th. You left, now they're dead. Ambrosia Sky is an immersive sim about exploring an asteroid colony devastated by an unknown contamination. Survive and harvest strains of hostile alien fungi, explore treacherous environments, and find meaning and beauty in so much death. Aki and Bree, both of you covered this one. Aki, start us off. What is Ambrosia Sky?
Okay, so in this, you play as a young woman who has come back to her base station home, and basically what they all did there was they were growing food mixed with fungus, like they were breeding earth fruits and veggies and shit into fungus so that it could survive basically anywhere. And this place has succumbed to the fungi. And now you're trying to find people who have, who might still hopefully be alive, and as well as finding different seeds and samples of the fungus and stuff to send back to your group, which, they're trying to make people immortal, so they're, you know, not batshit insane or anything. And, yeah, you do this by going around and getting rid of this fungus and occasionally finding mostly corpses, some of which can you can get the genetics from to add to the collective. And, yeah, this fungus isn't just standard fungus most of the time. Usually it's like, oh, this fungus has this giant core seed to it, and that gives it some weird power. For instance, one of them, when you get close to the seed, it just fucking explodes, and that can kill you. Or another one causes a... it reaches out towards things that are powered by electricity, so it can overload them. And if you step near it, it's going to electrocute your ass.
have fun. And you have to basically break the core off from the rest of the fungus that it's growing out of without destroying the core so that you can collect the core, because that is how you get your upgrades, by collecting the cores and using them eventually in between levels to upgrade different abilities and items that you have. The first act has, I think, like 11 or 12 levels. The second act only has like 6, I think, something like that. It's a lot smaller. I came across a really bad memory issue where suddenly the game would take 100% of my CPU, even though all of the stats required for this game are literally less than half of what I have. Yeah, so I should have been running this on the best settings and should have been able to run it like 3-4 copies of it at the same time. And no, it would, it took up everything within, you know, a few minutes, which is not what it's supposed to do. The devs do understand that's an issue and are trying actively to fix it. So I did not actually get through Act 2 because of that, because it was getting where I was spending like 2 hours on a level, because every, you know, few seconds I'd have to sit there and wait for 5 seconds for the game to stop hanging suddenly because it decided to take up 100% of my CPU. The game is otherwise fairly simple. You know, you're just collecting these items, clearing out all of the fungus in a level, and you can go back and replay levels to get more upgrade points, as well as to clear out 100% of the fungal infection of the place. And then after you actually do that, it actually lists it, which is really nice. So you can see all of the levels turning the right color to tell you that you've done everything in them and you don't have to touch that level again. You can also reset the level if you want, which makes it, basically, it makes it pretend like you haven't beaten it so that you can go in and get more upgrade points, because when you go back into a level, the funguses don't all come back, so you have to reset it so you can go in there so you can get more upgrades if you've done really poorly, like I was doing at the beginning and destroying a lot of the cores instead of saving them, because they can get destroyed from fall damage if gravity is active, so there's that to worry about. Because gravity isn't always active, which is fun. I prefer when it isn't. Bree, thoughts?
Yeah, so this game felt like a loot extraction mixed with the gunk. But instead of vacuuming stuff, you're using like a chemical-based power washer to clean fungus out of your way. But the game's like really about spaceship exploration. Sometimes gravity would be off, sometimes not. And it was a really fun element to the game that added some immersion as well. I like the variety of fungus types and the puzzle aspects to sorting things, like exploding things with thrown canisters, or that you had to be careful how you sprayed the electric fungus so you could collect the seed for the upgrades, because, like Aki mentioned, those upgrades really improve the experience to help you get through future missions. I also feel like the mission types helped in the world building. Sometimes you were finding items for the scarabs, sometimes you were finding a body to perform last rites on. See, it's a sci-fi world with cool space music. It's dark and foreboding and full of like machine sound atmosphere. I kind of want the soundtrack now, which is available for $7 on Steam. It's also on Bandcamp. The art reminded me of Dave McKean comic style art, if this were somehow multimedia. The color palette is like greens and orange and yellow and brown, and there's like chalky splashes of color to highlight things. It was visually a pleasure. Because it's not the same old, same old. And this did work well on controller, and I'd love to see this make it to console once it's all done. I say that because reading the Steam page and patches and updates, it sounds like there's still more of this game to come. And I didn't get to Act 2. I got, halfway through Act 1. I also had talked to Aki, and I figured I would wait on Act 2 because I definitely don't have the computer Aki has, and that worried me.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they added Act 2, something in their coding is what caused it. That's specifically in Act 2, sadly.
But Act 1 worked great. So
nice.
All right, well, it's a $15 game. What do you two think?
I'm 100% for this. This was a fucking amazing game. I absolutely adore this.
I'm enjoying the heck out of it, too.
It's not a $15 game. It's $25. What? Did the price go up?
Maybe. With the inclusion of Act 2, it may have. That is very possible.
Yeah, well, there you go. $24.99. There is the official price. Apologies for having the wrong info earlier. That's what happens when you're bad at your job.
Yeah.
$25 verdicts.
I'm still 100% for it. I love this. This is specifically the type of game I very much enjoy. So, yeah, I'm.
And that was a good recommendation on your part, because I enjoyed it as well, and I would give this a buy it as well. So as soon as they fix that leak, that'll be exciting to get to Act 2.
Very good. All right, moving on. Arcade Archives 2 Pinball Action, developed and published by Hamster Corporation. Released August 12th as an Xbox Play Anywhere game, Switch 2, and PS5 for $9.99. Pinball Action is a pinball game released by Tekken, Koei Tecmo Games, in 1985. Try to clear all the features on all four tables, switching between them over the game. Use tricks to shake tables, control the ball, and seize any chance at a win. Jacob, what is Pinball Action?
So, first off, it's really exciting that I actually get to do a ball squad for once. You know? Thank you. It's nice to be able to hear that while I'm doing this. But yeah, so Pinball Action is a pinball game that is, like, it's actually an arcade game, like an arcade video game. And you have a main table with this woman who is constantly like winking at you, depending on what you're doing on the table, meeting certain requirements will open up other tables that you're able to access. Like one of them is set up like a poker night kind of thing. Another one is, I believe it's like soccer cheerleaders,
bowling.
Bowling cheerleaders, thank you.
Girls bowling, just no cheerleaders. Girls bowling.
I got to that. Funnily enough. Okay, so side note. There's the extra tables that you're able to access. That one was the hardest one for me to access, yet it was the easiest one to play.
I never saw the Phoenix table.
Oh, the Phoenix table happened all the time for me.
I never got that one.
That and the poker night. It was just like the bowling one. Like I just could never get. Yeah, because the bowling one, you have to get all the green stuff up at the top and then shoot the ball up into there. And then the Phoenix is the upper right hand corner, I believe. I'm now probably misremembering it, but anyway,
the lower right is the Phoenix that goes down by the ball drain. And then the upper right is the blue one that goes to poker.
Well, yeah, but then what does middle left go to? I thought that was the poker.
It's just collect a bonus.
Oh shoot. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. Cause then it adds that to your score. But yeah, it's a decently difficult pinball game, in my opinion. However, you are able to hit a button to like bump the table and stuff like that. That never worked in my favor every single time that I tried using it. There were plenty of times where like the ball would bounce to the bottom and then bounce back up because I was like flapping the flippers, I guess quick enough, that for some reason it brought it back up. Like, cause it would like the ball would actually clip through, the flippers for me. and so, yeah, pretty much, I mean, it's like other ACA titles. There's the normal mode. There is the caravan, the timed, and the high score versions of them. The achievements are fairly easy to get. I will say this. However, because of where achievements pop on the Xbox, it is absolute hell trying to like play this game.
Yeah, you gotta pause.
But you can't pause during like high score mode. True. Which like I was really disappointed by because I was trying to do something and then my wife was like, "Oh, can you help me do this?" And like I was like, "Oh yeah, sure, babe." And then I paused, and then like I came back to the game and it's like game over. I'm like, "But I paused." So it's just be forewarned, pausing in this game is not actually a pause.
Well, it depends on the mode you're on, too.
Well, yeah, all right, yeah, fair. But yeah, like, honestly, like, it's pretty fun. It shows, like, a lot of imagination for, what did you say this was, 1985?
Yep.
With, you know, a pinball video game. I have played others that were around that time, pretty much based on like the Apple IIe computer from when I was a kid. And it's just like, this is way more detailed than any of that kind of stuff could ever hope to do. And like the tables are more complicated than those ever were. Like it's like, this is pretty darn fun. If you're a pinball enthusiast, definitely check this out. If you're an arcade game enthusiast, check it out. If you like video games, you should check it out. Like,
yeah, this is good. If you like achievements, yeah.
It's also something to check out.
Pretty easy 1K. I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
One. Yeah. $10 official verdict.
Absolutely.
Alrighty. We were supposed to cover V-Ball this week, but life happened and we will get that one, either next week or next episode. One of the two. So apologies to Hamster. We'll take care of this.
Jacob, we'll get it done. I love you.
Next up, Sister Other Paranoia, developed by Haze Denki, published by Haze Denki and Serenity Forge, released August 14th on Steam for $9.99. A dark visual novel by acclaimed creator Nyalra? I don't know. Overly sensitive to other people's emotions, the protagonist, a light novel writer, develops the ability to read minds only to be driven even deeper into isolation. His sole remaining comfort is his younger sister, gifted yet lonely. Aki, what is Sister Other Paranoia?
Okay, so this game is a visual novel. You get some choices throughout the game, but most of your interactions with this game are the boy is thinking about something, and then you click on the various people or items so he can wax poetic about the shit. This game basically is more or less just him talking down about people, because he's a pretentious little bastard who probably needs to have his fucking teeth fed to him. And beyond just him thinking and actively talking down to people, his only real other interactions are him talking with his elementary school grade sister that he's... they clearly have feelings beyond what they probably should for each other. So there's that. I did not particularly enjoy this game, personally. You're expected to play through it multiple times to get through all the various endings, and there's a bunch of them. And not all of them are possible to even be done in your first playthrough, so you can't save scum this just to quickly get through it. As you beat the game, you actually unlock new interactions later on and stuff. So you will have to play through this multiple times. Every playthrough for most of you is going to take probably 6 to 8 hours. For me, it was closer to like a 12-hour game, but I'm a really slow reader. And yeah, this is this guy, he's a university student, and he's a pseudo-intellectual. he's just smart enough to believe he's smarter than everyone, but not smart enough to actually be smarter than anybody. He's pretentious as all hell. And he is also the narrator of everything. So if you really like pretentious bullshit, this is for you. If you don't, if you're not really into that, this probably might be a bit too much for you. It's just your tolerance. I know some people really kind of like the avant-garde pretentious stuff. I'm not one of those. I have a very low tolerance for that kind of stuff. And this game, like, within, like, the first 10 minutes, I was like, why has no one beaten the shit out of this guy yet? That's kind of where my thought process stopped for the entirety of my gameplay of this was, man, someone should have hurt him by now. There's not a lot to say about this, because obviously I don't want to ruin the story, since that's literally... Yeah. What this is, it's a visual novel, it is a novel, it is 100% story. I will give the creator of this one thing. They do write very well. This is very well written. It's just not, clearly not for me, is all. So, like, I don't want y'all to think, oh, she didn't like it, it must be written like shit. No, they're very good at writing. You can tell that very clearly. It's just
the subject matter didn't click with you, didn't...
Yeah, and I struggle... I think most people would probably struggle with getting through this, just because I don't... The main character is not a likable character, and I... For most writing, you kind of need that. For the main character, or at least the narrator, someone that does a lot of the talking, it has to be likable, and this character is specifically made not to be likable. So you're not going to like them. And yeah, there's not much else to say, because it's very simple. You click A to continue through the game.
All right, well, let's talk price. It's, what is that, a kinetic visual novel, those are called?
This is closer to a kinetic one than it is an adventure one.
Right, yeah, kinetic, that's the one I'm looking for. Those are just the ones you read straight through, right?
Yeah, this is basically a kinetic one. You do get some options eventually, but it's mostly just you reading. Mm.
All right, $10. Thoughts?
I think for most people, this is going to be a pass. For people who are really into, like, avant-garde, pretentious stuff, like, you have a high tolerance for that, this will probably be down your alley. And if that's the case, I totally suggest you buy in it, because reading's fun, and it's, again, very well written. But for most people, this is definitely going to be a pass.
Well, it's sitting at mostly positive, so you're the odd one out.
Okay, that is fair. Maybe I just have a significantly lower tolerance for pretentious assholes than everyone else on the planet. Like, I had multiple pages worth of him waxing poetic about how Buddhism was a religion on just accepting that life was suffering, and I was like, this didn't need to be written just at all. Like, it's well written, but it didn't need to be written. Like, I had another page and a half, maybe two pages of them talking about what a panopticon is and how current social media is considered the current panopticon. I'm just like, okay. Yeah, that, all right, sure.
I guess using words like panopticon is, yeah.
Yeah,
just it's too many syllables for Aki.
Too many syllables for me.
Yeah, I know what a panopticon is. I didn't need the game to explain it to me. Even I've played Control.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. Next game to talk about is Berry Berry Berry. Three different words. Developed by Get Color Games, published by Black Lantern Collective, released August 20th on Series X and S, Switch, and PS5 for $9.99. Berry is a surreal first-person incremental game about growing berries and putting them in a hole to bury them. Get it? Berry. Lots and lots of berries. Jacob, what is berry?
Well, berry is... So it's definitely like one of those viral games that you see that have come out within like the last... I don't know, 5 or so years, like very similar to like stuff like Five Nights at Freddy's, like some of the Backrooms games, all that kind of stuff, where it's just like you're presented with a very weird photo grainy like 1980s VHS aesthetic, and gameplay that is deceptively simple. Yet there's something definitely creepy lying underneath all of this. And Berry is one of those games. And pretty much you just wake up in this room, which looks like a bright and cheery, like almost kind of like a Super Mario, like 64. Kind of like aesthetic, and you have these tubes where berries come out, and you pick up the berry and you put it in a hole and you get money for it, and you keep doing this, but you're only able to do it for so long every single day. Otherwise, you know, and you're just told you need to go to bed, like, you know, at the end of each day. And it took me a little bit to figure out, like, you know, why you need to go to bed at the end of each day. It's because that hole becomes sentient and will start chasing after you. Or maybe it's all hallucination. Who knows? But you don't want to fall down the hole. Otherwise, you lose all the money that you earned that day. But the money that you earn can be used to upgrade other stuff. Like, you can collect berry buddies, who are these like little berries that will automatically spawn berries for you to toss in the hole. They can be upgraded, like, so they provide like different types of berries, like raspberries and kiwis and pumpkins. And doing so with that, like, you earn more coins to earn more stuff. And by earning more stuff, you're eventually going to have to buy various items, which will get the underlying story going. Without ruining too much, you could buy a sledgehammer, which the game tells you don't throw at anything. So naturally, you're going to throw it at something, and then you realize, like, holy shit, the walls around me can be destroyed. And so, which brings in some puzzles that you have to figure out. I don't know whether the puzzles would have been easier to do on, like, with keyboard and mouse. There were some of them that I was having an issue with trying to do on the controller. But I don't know if that's just because I'm dumb and I'm, like, I wasn't figuring it out properly. But some of it, like, I did try, like, I had to go online onto the Steam forums and, like, figure out what the hell is the solution to this thing. Yeah, like, there is an underlying story to it. It seems interesting. You get little bits and pieces as you go along, because, like, you'll find emails, you'll find audio tapes that you can listen to. And so, like, there is actual lore to this game. But it all depends on how much you actually care about it and how deep down into the hole you're willing to go. Honestly, it's a fairly addictive game, too. I mean, like, and it seems silly because, again, all you're doing is just tossing berries down a hole, like, within, like, a certain amount of time. But I just couldn't stop doing it. So it's a weird game. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be for everyone, and it definitely felt like a time suck, but I'm enjoying it. I want to see, like, where the heck this thing goes. So, yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on it?
It's a weird game. Like as I said, it's not going to be for everybody, but, you know, it gives you enough breadcrumbs to, like, keep being interested. you know, as you're going along. Like, so, you know, I'd say at the very least, give it a shot.
Cool. Sounds good. Moving on.
What was the price for it?
$10.
Oh, yeah. For $10, I can recommend it. Yeah.
Cool.
Like, yeah, it's efficiently creepy.
Very good. I have some bad news. You reported earlier about those McDonald's promotions. That's UK and Ireland only.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Which sucks, because they're going to have Fallout cheesy potato rings, and those sounded awesome.
Oh, they do sound awesome. Oh, also, other news I just found out about. There's a Golden Axe show coming to Paramount Plus in September. It's an animated show.
That could potentially be horrible.
Eh. Trailer looked fun.
You know what else is coming? Como Rebbe, a furry visual novel.
I'm sorry, what?
Como Rebbe, furry visual novel.
If I don't know if I've ever heard anything more for Jacob in my life.
Is it coming for Xbox?
Yes, it is.
Request it. I'll review it.
I know you will.
Oh my god. Oh wow. No, it really is coming for Xbox.
Huh. I told you. Do you think I make this up?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah,
all right. Well, I guess this is going to be showing up on my achievement list. Great.
Eventually. We'll see. We'll see. It's not out for a few more weeks, so we'll see. Next up, Sensory Overload, developed and published by Pancake Studios, released August 20th on Steam for $9.99. A dropper game designed to overwhelm your senses, twisting tunnels, psychedelic patterns, and breathing walls assault your sense of balance as the chaos escalates with every level. Bree, I have a feeling this could be reviewed in about five words.
Possibly. Sensory overload. This is not an Aki game.
There's five words.
No. This is not an Aki game, was what I wrote in my notes first thing. It has a photosensitivity warning, and it means it. The game is designed to be disorienting, and that's just the name of the game. It's a constant movement or dropper game where you're steering through obstacles, dodging walls, generally aiming to survive the fall through the sequence, often landing in the target at the end. You're in a 3D corridor moving rapidly toward the bottom. There are walls that cover half the tunnel, spinning blades, grids, and more things that you need to move your body, or more aptly, your cursor through. You're playing first person while you try to get to the bottom. There's a bar that shows how far you got or didn't get toward the goal, which can be maddening to get toward the very end, only to crash. There is an achievement for crashing on the last obstacle, which I got pretty early on. Because fuck you, game. Yeah. There are different stages, including a tutorial level, as well as different modes. Levels are named things like Tornado, Digestion, Nausea, and of course, Sensory Overload. Each level has various stages to complete. Tornado has like seven, and there are also things they are named Squall and Gale and whatever, because it's the tornado theme. And the Digestion level kind of looks like you're moving through a digestive tract, and there's like little things to... bits of digested things and you know, hardened artery bits and things that you need to like move around.
That's apparently called peristalsis.
Oh, yeah.
Peristalsis. Yeah. The involuntary constriction and relaxation of the muscles of the intestine, creating wave-like movements that push the contents of the canal forward.
There you go. I was a little disappointed the controllers were not supported, but this is really a mouse or keys or keys game. You can switch in the settings. I preferred mouse. Controls are pretty basic for the game itself. There's a few keys you can use to do things like restart a segment or pause, but the gameplay is just moving the mouse to avoid obstacles, and you can hold the left mouse to speed up. I don't know why you'd want to do that. And the right one to apply the brakes. Besides the regular levels, there are other ways to play the game. There's a practice mode for you to rehearse sections without having to go through the whole stage. You can enter and exit this with a button press. In ranked, you have an endless mode where obstacles get faster and more challenging until you die. And in Zen mode, there's no level goal pressures with increasing difficulty, like in ranked, it's just endless. You can break into walls and keep going. You get more points, or you get a points penalty if you break in, a wall or something like that. And some of these designs are really interesting. So besides getting to the goal, you can improve your run scores. You can get less score if you break the whole way. Bonuses if you get near misses or go faster. There's an achievement for getting a high score in the top 100 for a level leaderboard. Nailed it. And then when you start your run, you have an attempt counter on the left and a score counter on the right. Mostly I just ignore those things and stay still for the start of a run, because, boy, it gets crazy fast. Graphically speaking, you're dealing with bright colors, translucent neons, breathing walls, swirling colors through your tunnel. And it's not as bad as I thought it would be, which is a compliment. Some of the levels were actually very pretty, like Magnetar levels, where you're moving so fast, you can't always really enjoy how pretty it is. But some of that is just like part of the game. You get into this zone and it's really pretty. The audio was sadly broken for me. I put in a bug report through the internal reporting tool on the start menu, and I think they can get it fixed. There were music tracks you could select between like 12 and 15 songs. It all sounded really good for the couple of seconds they worked before a loud high-pitched squeal would come in and the music would stop.
Oh no.
Yeah. That's it was good. Some good electronica, yeah. I would note that I played this pre-release on a fully loaded potato computer, so aside from the music glitch, this ran great. Hopefully they'll be able to get that sorted, because the music seemed like a good part of the zen of this experience. But yeah.
Very good. $10. What do you think of this one?
I don't know what I was expecting with this game from the pictures and the descriptions other than a dropper game, but this was way more enjoyable than I expected. Something I can noodle with in small segments. I don't think I could play this for hours at a time, but this was really fun. And if they can fix that audio, I would actually say buy it. This is something worth trying. Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. One last game to talk about tonight, and it's kind of like a kid's corner one. Kind of. Like, well, a big kid's corner.
Well, I mean, it aired on Nickelodeon, so I mean...
Yeah. But this isn't like Nick Jr.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, Avatar, like, The Last Airbender, Quest for Balance, developed by Bamtang Games, published by Game Mill Entertainment, available on all platforms right now for $49.99. Relive the epic adventure of the original Avatar, The Last Airbender series as you play as Aang and his friends and master the elements, explore the most unique locations from the series, solve challenging environmental puzzles, and experience the most heart-touching moments of the story. Play the story solo or with a friend through the game's unique two-player co-op mode. Embrace your destiny and experience Aang's original adventure. Jacob, what is Avatar The Last Airbender Quest for Balance?
So Avatar Quest for Balance is set after the events of the show. Like, not that long, maybe like a year after the events. And it's really inconsequential to the main storyline. Pretty much, if you've watched Avatar The Last Airbender, there is an episode where the group goes and watches a performance at this theater of these actors, and essentially trying to put on a play about Aang's life, and it is just absolutely horrendous, and like everyone's they portray everyone absolutely like incorrectly, and like you're just watching the reactions and it's hilarious. But the lady who was in charge of it, she's like, well, now that we really know the story of the Avatar and everything that went on, we really like the play could really use a refresh. And, you know, like, so it's more accurate to how, to like, to what history actually happened. And so, the White Lotus Society, like, they're sitting down and they're explaining it. And unfortunately for this game, like, I will say this, the game assets look great. Like, they look fantastic for it. But then all of the cutscenes are done in what looks like, you know, like a comic book style, like, kind of flash. And so it's all, like, you know, single frame images with bad voice acting behind it. And it's just, like, it kind of takes you out of the game of it a bit. But how the game plays out with its storyline is that it's essentially, this is a greatest hits of the Avatar The Last Airbender series. And so you're playing through, you know, getting off of Prince Zuko's ship at the very beginning. You're trying to meet, like, the one of the water tribe groups and, like, get their like, gain their trust. You're going to be running into various characters like King Bumi, you know, throughout the whole thing. And it's like you're going to get to reenact various parts. Now, it's not just, you know, it's not just as simple as run around and, like, you know, use your powers against everybody. And one person in the chat was asking if this is like the Xbox 360 Avatar Burning Earth game, which is notorious because there was 5 achievements in it. And it was essentially like altogether, it was like punch your enemies like 1,000 times in a row.
Get a combo, I think a 500 hit combo.
It's something like that. And it was real easy to cheese, and you could, like, you could beat the, like, you could 1K it in like 5 minutes if you really wanted to. And it, like, what stinks about it is that I actually bought the game, like, you know, first off, so I could cheese it, but I also was curious about it. That was actually like a pretty decent game. And like everyone just sleeps on it 'cause there's only like 5 achievements to it. Anyway, this one, there is depth to the game. Like, you have a skill tree that you have to mess with, and, like, you can improve everyone's powers, you can gain new powers. Sometimes you have to, like, find scrolls, whether you buy them from merchants, or whether you find them in treasure chests, to gain new moves, because that's how you're learning upgraded versions of moves. And then there's also side quests, and those are usually done in the form of puzzles, like pretty much like moving objects, or like, you know, trying to get from point A to point B, like figuring out like the environment, like changing the environment, you know, like, so platforms are make it so you're able to jump to certain areas, or they're all fetch quests. And the fetch quests, I'm not going to lie, get really old really fast, because it's just like the game is just having you run from one end of the map to the other, like literally running like from one end to the other. Yeah. And it's just like, okay, great. The combat is fine. Like, you have moves where you're trying to, like, you learn how to use the Avatar's powers, and eventually you're going to learn the other elements, because you start off with air, but, you know, you're going to be able to learn water, fire, and earth as you go on, and there are bonuses for being able to switch between the elements as you're fighting, which is pretty neat. And also you can also swap between different characters as you need to on the fly. Because obviously certain characters are able to do, you know, certain things. One character has a, whose name I'm blanking on. He has like a boomerang that he could throw. Thank you. You could use that for puzzles. It's like the combat's okay. Like, I never felt like I was going to lose during it. And if anything, like, the biggest enemy for you in this game is the camera. The camera is regularly a pain in the butt for this, and it can be really difficult when you're trying to do puzzles that involve platforming, because the camera won't move where you need it to be able to see, like, where you're able to jump to or jump off of, which will remove some of your health bar because you fell down a hole. Or you got injured by like fire or water or something like that. And yeah, it's just like, if you can get past, you know, the not so great camera, like the bad voice acting and like the cutscenes, which honestly are just awful. There's honestly like quite a bit to like in this game. And I'm glad that like the devs like didn't just slap, like it's definitely not like something that's slapped together. Because as I said, like the game assets, like they're beautiful. And like the little mini games that they have going on, during it, some of it reminds me of like the mini games that you'd find in some of the Paw Patrol stuff when you're controlling Sky, or some of the vehicles, like, cause you're like, you're collecting stuff and like, you have to move through a certain environment. It's kind of like an upgraded version of that. And so there is like a level of difficulty to it, but as long as like you're collecting enough of the coins during each thing, which I mean, unless you're really messing up, you will do it. You know, it's honestly, it's pretty fun. Like, I don't think it necessarily deserved all the hate that it got when it first came out. I mean, there's definitely stuff that could be improved on it, but like, I'm digging this and, you know, like I'm willing to sit through the camera issues on this to see the end of the game. Yeah, like I would have preferred like a new story instead of just something that rehashes everything. But to be honest, it would have been hard to do that because like you have to make it so like, you know, you have the progression of the powers and all that kind of stuff. Whereas if you started it right off at like after the show had ended, Aang already is the Avatar. He has all of his powers. You know, you'd just be going through the game mowing down people. Whereas this one, like there is some strategy to it because you've got limited powers and like a limited, like ability bar. And so, you know, like it is what it is. I think it's worth checking out if you're a fan of Avatar: The Last Airbender. Like I don't think it deserves the hate it got.
All right. Well, it clocks in at $50. Do you think that's the big hurdle? Is the price tag?
Yeah. To be honest, yeah. Like, you know, if this was like a $30 game, I'd be like, all right, yeah, cool. Like, you know, like it would be like a good budget title. But $50 is a bit much. You may want to you're going to want to wait for a sale on this.
That's fair. All right, and with that, we're done. We made it through. That was a really short one, wasn't it? Yeah, 2.5 hours, really quick.
But and I was on time, yay!
The only thing that matters is, in the end, Jacob's dog did not fuck his shoe.
I don't wear shoes, I wear sandals. Didn't we just do a kid's corner?
Oh my god, yes we did.
Good job, Joe.
Well, I'm going to edit that.
Oh, no, don't. That's hilarious.
No, you don't.
They'll listen to it. They'll hear that, and they're not going to be happy. So no, he does.
Technically, it's not an outright title. It's a game mill title. So
yeah, and, you know. Oh, yeah, we do have to mention that. This game, Avatar... hold on. Do you need to, like, pause so we can mention that, or what?
Well, you're making me keep all of it, so what's the point?
Oh, all right, cool. Yeah, so this game was given to us by Outright Games through their partnership with Game Mill Entertainment, because Game Mill doesn't have, like, a brand ambassador program like Outright does, and so... like they just hand over games to them. So yeah, so we got this cool one for this week. So. Yeah, it is a neat partnership. Yeah, this was the first game this summer that we got through Game Mill. Next week we have The Walking Dead Destinies. So which will not be a kids' corner game.
No, that shouldn't be. I don't even think Avatar should be. That's a big kids thing.
Both of my kids have seen the show.
Okay, but like, it's still like it. It's geared like towards an older child. It's not geared towards the Nick Jr. crowd. It's geared towards,
I mean,
like the preteens.
Yeah, but my youngest was like 7 when we were watching it, and like, and
okay, that's still not Nick Jr. area. Nick Jr.'s like 4.
Can I finish?
No, nope.
And like that kid is still into like Paw Patrol, like. So, okay,
we're still into Fraggle Rock.
Oh Jesus!
Heck yeah!
Yeah, you know they're doing a live show. There's a live show. Actually, I think it's going to be up in NEPA soon. You should go, Joe.
One I know who says NEPA. We are done with this episode. Does anyone have any final words before we play whatever song I decide to play?
Well, now I just want to hear like a punk cover of Fraggle Rock.
Ooh, do you have one, Joe?
I don't have one, but I could look for one.
Oh, Bree, do you have one that you can recommend to Joe?
There is one out there.
Oh, okay.
Carnage knows. Yeah. Carnage knows.
Pass your cares away. Worries for another day. Let the music play. Down with Fraggle Rock. Pass your cares away. Dancing's for another day. Let the fraggles play.
Fraggle Rock.